Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. My name is J.B. Sibanyoni. I'm the acting chairperson of the Justice Committee for now. And then today we are here in connection with the RICA Act. I will start by asking the Justice Committee to introduce ourselves before I go through the mobile industry. Can we start anyway? Mr. Landers, that introduction.
No, I'm not introducing the bill. I don't want this bill. My name is Llewellyn Landers. I'm a member of Parliament in the National Assembly and a member of the African National Congress.
John Jeffrey, I don't know if we need, we're all members of Parliament, ANC.
Dean Smart, formerly Communications, very happy to be back in Justice, where I was in the first place. And it's wonderful to see you all again.
Okay. My name is Patejilo Lomisa, ANC member of this committee. My name is Lindumusa Gabriel Ndabandaba, member of the Justice and Constitutional Development Committee.
Steve Swart from the ACDP, member of the Justice Committee for almost 12 years now, going into 12 years.
Thank you very much.
This morning on your TV appearance, you looked very good and you were very gracious and you represented the committee very well.
Oh, thank you very much. Well, that was my first interview. I forgot to say, as usually people say, I'm the first time caller. I didn't say I'm the first time interviewee. Right. Ladies and gentlemen, honorable members, we are here today because the mobile industry would like to make a request. But let me just ask them to introduce themselves before we continue.
Thank you, Chairperson. My name is John Redman. I'm the Deputy DG in the Department responsible for legislation. And next to me is Ina Buerta, also from the department. She's a director and she's responsible for the drafting and dealing with the bill that that we have introduced into Parliament. If you want me to continue, then I will do so.
Let us go to the mobile industry, even if they will be making a presentation today. I'm giving them an opportunity just to make an introduction of themselves. We just press the button which says microphone on or off.
I'm from Vodacom.
Esther Marie Vodacom.
I'm Katia Konyoka, the Director of Legal and Regulatory at Vodacom.
I'm Palamile Pongwana, Managing Executive for Regulatory Vodacom.
I'm Unintin Mwepe from Vodacom.
I'm Robert Matonga, Executive Director, MTN.
David Smuts from MTN.
My name is Nonwabi Singoko. I'm from the Office of the Chief State Law Advisor. I'm a senior state law advisor there.
Thank you very much. Yes, I learned that mobile industry would like to make a request. We will be giving them the opportunity first, and then we will come back to our Justice Department officials. A mobile industry, I think...
The two are really linked, because the bill is seeking to extend the... I mean, maybe we weren't quorum earlier. Maybe that we are now that we're quorum, just for I would suggest maybe Mr. Rudman maybe run through why there's the bill, or the and then as far as I know the industry are going to address us on what they've been doing to meet the existing deadline.
I think we are in agreement with that, Mr. Rudman. We will give you an opportunity just to put us on board. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Very briefly, let me start off by saying firstly that we did provide committee members with a document this morning dealing with the bill itself, the act, the interception, the RICA legislation. Then it also deals with all the provisions that are relevant for this briefing. It then contains a history of sections 40 and 62.6. Those two sections were amended by Parliament about 3 years ago. It was indicated at that stage in terms of the legislation that certain information need to be provided to the mobile cellular operators by way of a paper-based system. And the mobile cellular operators requested us to move away from the paper-based system to an electronic way of dealing with the information and obtaining the information. And that is why the legislation was amended 3 years ago. That section 40 and 62.6. In terms of the section which came into operation on the 1st of June 2009, the mobile cellular operators were given a period of 18 months in terms of which they had to specifically obtain certain information from the historic customers. That is the customers that at that stage then were in possession of cell phones and SIM cards. It was towards the beginning of this year that they started indicating to us that they were not going to reach that deadline. The deadline then being the 31st of December of this year. In terms of the legislation, if a person who owns a cell phone is not registered by the 31st of December of this year, his communication will then be cut off. In other words, he will not be able to use his cell phone on the 1st of January of 2011 if he did not register in terms of the applicable legislation. As I have indicated, we were requested towards the beginning of this year, roundabout, it was indicated to us by these operators that they will probably not be able to reach the deadline. We had a number of meetings with the operators, I think 4 or 5 meetings during the year. You will also recall, or some of the members will recall, that when the legislation was accepted by Parliament, a resolution was accepted in terms of which the department had to report back on the implementation of the legislation. We did prepare a report and we did submit that report to Parliament during June of this year. And in that report we indicated that we have got this indication from the operators that they will not be able to reach the deadline of 31 December. I can just mention that when the bill was debated in Parliament and in the committees at that stage or when it was introduced, the time frame within which registration had to take place was 12 months. The operators requested a period of 26 months, and Parliament then changed the 12-month period to 18 months. As I indicated, the legislation came into operation on the 1st of June last year, and the back to a report we did in the report deal with the question of the possible extension. Parliament has not yet considered those reports, and it was then about a month or so ago decided that we should meet with the operators once again. The minister had a meeting with them, and it was decided that on the basis of the information provided to us, that we should request Parliament to extend that period of 18 months for a further 6 months, in other words, until the 30th of June 2011. The bill was then introduced into Parliament a week ago, last week sometime, and we considered all the motivation. We also consulted with the law enforcement agencies and the police, who are probably the institution that uses the interception legislation more than anybody else, supported the extension of the period for 6 months. In the document, Chair, we also indicated that the document that was circulated this morning, and I must apologize that it wasn't sent through yesterday. It was the intention to do so, but there was a miscommunication. We also provide the reasons why we think that the extension of the deadline should be favorably considered. As I indicated, we did consult with the law enforcement agencies and the police support the amendment. Some of the other agencies did not respond, but because we felt that the police is the institution that really deals with this legislation, we thought that we would go ahead. It was approved by Cabinet last week. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks. You know, it may, if the deadline is not met, I think it will affect a large number of people, and it will come as a surprise. Because, you know, usually towards midnight on the 31st of the year, 31st December of the year, when you try to phone just a few minutes before the time, you find that the lines are blocked until on the following day, the early morning. But people who are not registered will be surprised, because if this was not extended, they will continuously think that it is blocked, yet they are no longer connected.
I can just mention that during the meeting with the minister, it was indicated by the operators that approximately 10 million people still need to be registered. And these are people predominantly in the rural areas, informal settlement and rural areas. And I'm sure they will explain to you what the reasons for that is, why they could not reach them, and why they, all of them, and why they found it very difficult to register those people.
Very much. I don't think people want to raise questions, because I'm going to give to the operators to tell us what plans do they have in order to comply with this. Over to you, the mobile industry.
Chairperson, honourable members of the Justice Committee, on behalf of Vodacom, I want to express our sincerest gratitude for the opportunity afforded to us to share with you our experiences with respect to registering mobile subscribers since the advent of RICA. And I have to take this opportunity to concur with everything that the Deputy Director General has put forward before this committee, and that in the last 7 years working with him, he's proven not to be an easy negotiator, always a doubting Thomas, but if he comes to a point where he acknowledges the sincerity and bona fides of the mobile industry, we've got to understand that it's taken a lot of effort presenting them with a lot of data, which to some degree has convinced the department that there is merit for a case for extension. Essentially, we're not going to be making a joint industry presentation because the experiences of the different operators with respect to registration are not essentially the same. So represented today is Vodacom and MTN, and Vodacom and MTN largely because their base in terms of subscribers is essentially huge, and they would be the two operators who would be worst affected if the deadline were not to be extended. Now what we're going to converse in our presentation is the progress that we've made to this point, the initiatives with respect to registration that we've undertaken since the advent of RICA in August of 2009, the challenges that we faced, and our plans going forward. With respect to registration of active customers, Vodacom has to this point registered about 78% of its active subscriber base. 4.6 million subscribers still need to be registered. And of these 4.6, 3.6 million represent the prepaid customer base, and the million is our contract subscribers. So in essence, what we are saying is that about 22% of our subscriber base as Vodacom still has to be registered. The initiatives that we've undertaken since RICA was proclaimed in July of 2009 would have included the implementation of the requisite systems and processes, which is the development and rollout of RICA applications and 14,000 odd RICA terminals in both formal and informal markets. We signed up and trained approximately 160,000 RICA agents nationally. We also undertook initiatives to educate our customers about RICA and the need for them to register when purchasing starter packs. An education methodology that was followed was essentially via television, radio, and print media. We also undertook direct education campaigns via SMSs, as well as the bills or statements that Vodacom issues to its customers from time to time. The next table basically wants to give the members of this committee some indication of before RICA with respect to prepaid. As an example, we used to register about 112,000 SIM cards. With the advent of RICA, we saw those numbers declining. Originally in the first month, it was about 17,000 a day. And I think the worst scenario was about 6,000 subscribers a day. But in the last few months, we're also seeing the numbers basically picking up. So there is a change of attitude in the minds of our customers. Now, our efforts to make sure that we register our entire customer base included incentives that we pay to our trade partners. We essentially paid our partners bonuses when monthly targets were met.
We also came up with some incentives for customers themselves, such as 5 rand free airtime or 10 free SMSs, ad hoc offerings of 29 rands or more airtime to selected customers. Most significantly, we also launched a product called Rika Quicker, whereby 100 customers could win 10,000 rand a week in August, 5,000 rand in September, and 2,500 rand in October. All of this done with the purpose of trying to get our customer base to accept that RICA was important from a law enforcement agency perspective, law enforcement point of view, and, you know, to incentivize them to come forward and register their SIM card. Targeted registrations also took place. Like, we went to the places where our subscribers are employed, to office parks, and also ensured that we basically set up stations in areas where our customers would logically have their IDs or proof of residence, such as municipalities, Department of Home Affairs, and banks. Significantly, we also had foot soldiers who would basically, as far as possible, try and visit people in the areas where they live. In terms of the challenges that we think we're facing and we experience, it seems to us educating people about RICA and basically getting people to understand the RICA requirements was a challenge much taller than we anticipated. So it didn't immediately have the impact that we thought would have through the many initiatives that I have described above. We also noted that customers in your rural communities are generally not exposed to the traditional media, such as TV, print, and your conventional forms of radio. Maybe here would exclude community radio. Contract customers, for some reason, they didn't think that they needed to register. But if you look at the problem from a perspective of a contract customer, what effectively happens is the networks generally have all the details of those people, in the sense that we need to do credit vetting, and to do credit vetting, you ask for somebody's payslip, you try and get as many details as possible. So to many of them, it appeared that this initiative was not targeted at contract subscribers, but at prepaid customers. But the reality is that the way in which the law is currently formulated, the expectation is that your contract customers also have to register. With respect to prepaid subscribers, I think the biggest issue was their inability to produce proof of residential address. When it comes to electricity, most of them are on prepaid accounts, and those accounts don't generally reflect a residential address. And it also occurred to us that many of our prepaid customers, even when they receive post, generally the post is not addressed to a physical or residential address, but it's generally to some post box number, which basically means it doesn't comply with the requirements of RICA. And I think the important point to make is that most of our prepaid subscriber base, they reside in rural communities. And the issues with rural communities is that generally they aren't physical addresses. But significantly, it's also areas where the operators in and of themselves don't have direct access. And therefore, we appoint agents. We call them informal agents. Now, on the face of it, it might look like a preposterous proposition. A reality of the evolution of the mobile industry in the country over the last 15 years is that it became a vehicle for empowering people at a level of communicating with a tool called mobile, an environment that historically were not covered by fixed. But it also became an avenue for creating jobs. Now, your informal traders, I think how the structures work is we pay them certain incentives and commission, and they employ other people. Now, the real issue here is that they was making a case for an extension. We want to submit to the committee that at play is the balancing of a number of competing interests. The one particular position would be, from a policy perspective, increasing access to communication services, which basically means you reach out to people who historically were excluded from the mainstream of the economy because they can't relate to the world outside the immediate situation. And of course, fundamentally, you have the law enforcement requirements of the country. One won't underplay them in any way. So calling for an extension, we're saying the balance, the correct balance that needs to be found, is the risk of cutting services to people who historically haven't had access to communication services, and of course the imperative of law enforcement in the country. And we believe that that balance can be achieved by giving us an additional 6 months to basically try and reach out to as many people as possible. Now, last point to make would be customer apathy is an issue, and we believe this is not a phenomenon that is peculiar to the mobile industry. In this country, when you talk about either a change in an identity document or issuing of new driver's licenses, people generally wait till the 11th hour. But what is important to underscore in the context of the mobile industry is that it's probably the first time that this country has had to confront a situation where you need to register about 45 million SIM cards or customers who are out there in the market. So if you're talking about FICA 7 odd years ago, you're probably worried about 10 million people. And even so, there were some exemptions depending on the amount of money that one had in the bank. I think the situation of driver's licenses, it was just underlined 8 million at the time. But even so, there were extensions. Now, what you're putting forward to the committee is that you have to consider the magnitude of the problem, that you're really worried about 45 million SIM cards which are out there in the market that needs to be registered. And we believe that the period of 18 months, which was originally allowed by this committee, whilst on the face of it originally, it seemed that it was an adequate period. But our experience to date on the ground is that there would be a need for some form of indulgence to be granted to us and consideration for an extension by 6 months be granted to us. Now, in terms of our plans going forward, we basically think we're going to continue with many of the campaigns that we started originally, but we are now going to be much more aggressive. We will continue with targeted SMS campaigns to make sure that customers are aware now of the consequences of not registering by the 30th of June 2011 if the extension is granted. And the real consequence would be that we would have no alternative. There's absolutely no chance
that will get an extension, and therefore people are going to be disconnected. Specifically speaking to contract customers, I think the initiatives that we're going to undertake going forward would be to increase the incentives that we'll pay to our trade partners for the registration of customers with respect to SMMEs and corporate customers. We'll set up call centers or call center agents who will call the customers concerned directly and set up appointments with them for us to go and recur their SIM card. As for individual contract customers, I think whenever somebody is due for an upgrade, logically we'll make sure that they are registered. We will offer customers some form of incentive to register through, for instance, allowing them some free minutes or airtime, as well as certain megabits of data. We will try, again, to send people to various households directly and ensure that we reach out to as many people as possible. As for prepaid, we are introducing a proof of residence form that a customer can take to a local authority or a traditional leader to certify their residential address. So what we're trying to do is to simplify it. Instead of saying, you know, the police or whoever is the relevant authority must write a letter. So we'll give a specific form which you just complete and then you sign it, and that's proof of address. We will distribute this form in a number of areas, but more particularly in taxi ranks, informal markets, as well as many other peri-urban areas. And trade partner incentives have been increased for existing customer registration. The important thing is we are now going to cluster customers who have not been registered into areas where there are 1,000 or more customers still to be registered. We'll partner with rural communities to get the people to register. Example, pay for paint of a school or set up soccer nets, etc. Pay incentives to churches and community centers to assist with the registration process. We also rolling out some RICA registration station in many areas where most of our prepaid customers obtain. The permanent RICA agents are located at this RICA station for long periods of time. We'll also inform customers through the means of community radio and SMSs that the RICA agents are in the area for an extended period of time. We'll also use promotional events to draw crowds to traditional events such as dancing. So, Chairperson, in short, I think what essentially we're bringing to the committee is that since RICA was passed into law, we've basically done the best we can. Now, if you take the Vodacom situation with a subscriber base of about 23 million subscribers, we've captured about 78 to 80% of that base. There's a 22% outstanding, and we think if we given an opportunity, we'll probably reach out to as many of those people as possible. And I guess the pertinent question would be, what would happen if come 30th of June next year, and then we still haven't registered? everyone. And I think our answer to that question is that if you reach that situation, probably the people will not be registered. People who just don't want to register, they would logically be the people that when in this parliament, in this committee, passed RICA and said we've got a problem with respect to our efforts, the efforts of the country to combat crime, because we just can't trace some people who are involved in these activities. That would speak to those people will never register, and they don't want to register for a number of reasons. Either they're in this country illegally, or they are engaged in activities that are unlawful, and therefore, in our view, it would mean that the RICA has served its purpose. We have separated the chaff from wheat, and we will happily disconnect those people. But we think as the situation stands, there is a sizable number of legitimate customers out there who, for various reasons, didn't embrace the RICA process. So we're asking for indulgence, additional time, to try and reach out to as many of those customers as possible. Thank you very much.
Remind me your name again.
Nkateko.
Nkateko.
Yeah.
Thank you very much, Nkateko. So, we are asking an extra time from that guy saying, are you free or done? Freedom. Honorable members, is your opportunity for questions and comments. Mr. Honorable Landers, Jeffrey Swartz, Professor.
Chair, maybe just a procedural point before. Are we getting, we've heard from Vodacom, are we getting anything from MTN?
Thank you.
Chair, procedurally, I don't know, up to the other colleagues as well, would it not be better to get both presentations and
yes.
then I don't know if I didn't hear anyone from Cell C, I don't know if they're not here.
I misunderstood you. I thought you were speaking for both Vodacom and I make a note here. Okay, I think it will be fair that we listen to your colleagues first before we open it for questions. Because the ground that, or the questions that may be raised, maybe they will also be relevant to them. So you are Celsi? MTN. Well, is Celsi your competitor or your colleague? Okay, just remind me of your name again before you continue.
Okay, yes, my name is Robert Mazonga, and I'm the Chief Corporate Service Officer at MTN. Okay. Chairperson, Honorable Members of the Portfolio Committee of Justice, Deputy DG of Justice, Members of the Justice Department present here today. Ladies and gentlemen, good morning. And it is indeed an honor for me, on behalf of MTN, to address you today, basically on the progress made to date on RICA and the key challenges we've experienced and also some way forward. And I'm very cognizant of the fact that my colleague, obviously from Vodacom, Mr. Nyoka, and also the Deputy DG has given you enough info this morning already, and to ensure that actually I do not also bore the committee that much, I think I will just try to give an additional challenges or few things which are exceptionally different from Vodacom's side. And safe to say that most of the key challenges they face are almost similar to us. And I think a glance from the MTN point of view is that we, when we look at the whole RICA status to date as to where we are, we currently have almost like 25% of our prepaid customers which are not yet RICA'd. We also got about 35% of our postpaid customers, which in total, of the total base, we're talking about 26%, which is probably plus minus 4.4 million customers which are not yet registered to date. And just to come quickly now on the some of the key challenges of what we have done to register our existing customer base, we have launched many specific, or similar to other mobile operators, specific radio and print media campaigns since the effective date of RICA, targeting our existing customer base. And we also, as you're aware, because being the global sponsor, we also leverage a lot from the 2010 FIFA Soccer World Cup to register our existing customer base. And we had an opportunity to register our customers at our MTN Fan Pass and at our Ekasi TV site, where we also incentivized to do by incentivize our customers get by giving away the airtime and quite a lot of goodies and the vuvuzelas and all the World Cup merchandises. We also have been focusing on various innovative ways to take RICA to the people, such as our latest campaign, which those of you who probably on the TV could have seen it, using also the Mr. Delivery to register our existing customers in their homes when placing orders for certain consumables such as food. So you, in most instances, you'll find that when the delivery, Mr. Delivery comes, we'll also be doing also RICA in terms of RICA-ing those people before it gives you the food and before you pay, probably. And we also have campaigns where of the SMSs where we've been sending all the SMSs to our people, to our customers, we're reminding them to RICA. And also we have been using those SMS campaigns in the most instances, even now when we had the final of the MTN 8 in our football clubs and the teams which we support just before the games. And in our MTN 40, and you'll be glad to know that we also recently now on the Mrs. Soweto, we have been using that as a platform to reach our people, especially the young customer base of the youth. And we are currently also coming up with some of the awareness or the innovative campaigns in terms of trying to get the certain celebrities and sportsmen to become our RICA ambassadors, a concept which has been taken also from the 2010 FIFA World Cup. And we have also, I mean, these are some of the initiatives which we have done, as also deploying the what we call MTN zoners. This would be the youth which are predominantly unemployed in the township mostly. We're taking those people who are unemployed, giving them jobs, but more specifically they wear yellow things, walk around with mobile containers, recurring people in the township. And we also appointed some agencies in terms of who's going to be going to the public venues and registering the people. We also have rolled out plus minus 26,000 points of presence across the country. That's where we could terminal, where you can rigor the people. So we're laying out all the terminals, and now probably we're going more also into the rural areas trying to find people. Previously we were using spaza shops, but the campaign now is also driving people where you got individuals with their own homes, where you could utilize your home and have a point of RICA presence where you can RICA your family members, your friends. So these are some of the innovative way campaigns of trying to bring RICA to the people. And also on the, while still talking about the innovative way, we also come up, look at the technology side. From the technology side, we have introduced 6 technology options. These are systems and softwares for our channels so that they can be able to register the people. Also in the spaza shop, where we do not have computers and the internet access to RICA, you can simply register the customers using your handset, your cell phone. So this is where you find people, especially in the rural areas where you could not have, you got challenges, sometimes it's challenges with electricity, and all those kind of things. So we're coming up with those innovative way where you can use your cell phone to reach other people. So, and also from the financial side, I mean, just to share also from the financial side as MTN, that we also have invested a lot financially. I think we have spent to date more than 150 million in terms of making sure that we roll out these terminals, we incentivize, we give out the merchandise, we give out the free airtime. And also this investment includes the marketing cost, the technology cost I was talking about of the software and systems, and the support we give to our channels, our retailers, your PEP, your Edcon. And of course, we are also not immune to the key challenges which we had Nkateko talking about. And I think just in short, I won't really bore you too much because we have all those challenges have already been shared. I think we are aware that, I mean, the Department of Home Affairs have also got some problems in terms of the IDs. So the challenges of the IDs is really indeed a big challenge where people do not have the identity document. And, you know, you have more than 500,000 of those identity documents which are not yet collected from the Home Affairs. So that is also one of the challenges also you face with where people do really want to abide by the law, they want to recover, but they do not have the necessary documentation. And you also heard about the informal areas where we have difficulty of proof of residential address. And, I mean, just to remind you, the RICA Act assumes that an individual who does not have a formal residential address or employment address will receive a post at a school or at a church or a retail store, which is not the truth. There are certain people who, in the informal settlement, they did not receive any kind of a post. You know, so that is also a challenge, but those people are really want to be law-abiding. And also the small and medium enterprises, your SME in the informal areas, in the townships, you know, some of them have discontinued the issue of selling the prepaid SIM cards. Some of them, they give you a lot of challenges where they say that some of them, they say that there's crime. People, when you sell SIM cards, they think that you've got a lot of money, then they do not want to sell those SIM cards anymore. And those are the challenges also which reduce the access to point of recurring people where you then have to find another mechanism of establishing. Hence, that's why we're coming up with things like individuals who want to volunteer their homes to recur the people. And the additional complexity, which is the fact, is the situation that has an impact on the face-to-face verification process, which is required by the RICA Act, to say you have to have face-to-face verification. And especially when this process relates to Muslim women who follow the tradition of the niqab practice. So in this case, MTN is required to respect, we also require to respect the religious practices and must perform the face-to-face verification in some situation. And that is some of the, we're just sharing some of the issues which some people comes up with our RICA agencies to say some of the people are refusing to say they do not want to uncover their face and said, I do not want to uncover the face and therefore I'm not going to be unrecord. And so those are some of the situations, but it's not in a high density thing, it's in a separated scenarios which we also face with. And what we will do differently if the RICA extension is granted, I mean the remaining 6 months, we definitely will intensify, like Vodacom, also our marketing strategies, where we deploy a lot of RICA agencies at schools, universities, shopping malls, and also public venues. We'll also increase our funding with regard to rolling out the RICA agency point of presence. And we're also hoping to use the system which we just developed now, which we call geocoding techniques. This is the software which basically will be able to identify, we will be able to see which area where we get a lot of people who have not recovered. And then that information will then assist us to be able to deploy a lot of RICA agents, people to that particular areas. We are also engaging with various governmental departments to establish RICA points of presence at their respective branches, where, for example, at the Home Affairs, we probably will be having the establish a mini office where people can be recorded when they come to collect their identity documents. And
I think, as I said, that I wouldn't like to repeat a lot of issues which you had, so I will probably just say that, again, concur with my colleague to say that if we get this 6-month extension, we're definitely sure that the majority of people who are law-abiding citizens, we will be able to capture those, and those which we want are probably the people who, even if you give them an additional 2 years, they will just not going to register. Thanks.
Maybe I suggest that Vodacom, you come closer, and so that when the questions are asked, it will depend to whom is the question directed. Can we go back to the very same numbers or fresh? Okay. Who was first, by the way? Llewellyn is.
Chairperson, first, can I formally request hard copies of both presentations?
Okay, hard copies of both presentations, is it possible?
Yes.
Okay.
Chairperson, I think we need to start by asking ourselves a very simple question. What is the purpose, the objective, or the intent of RICA? RICA's purpose, its objective and intent is to fight crime. Prevent crime, combat crime, prevent terrorism and combat terrorism. It has nothing to do with the cell phone operator's bottom line. That's your problem, not our problem. Please let us understand that right at the outset. Now, Chairperson, first, with Vodacom, they showed us the initiatives they've taken since August 2009. But the act came into being before then. So they've actually been busy with this for a year, a little more than a year perhaps. So one shouldn't be surprised at the numbers that they've put on the screen showing those who have not registered. They keep coming back to the challenges faced or presented by the informal sector, people who live in, back in 2008, one of them told us about the gentleman who rode in from the mountains in Tumtata to buy airtime and SIM cards. And that gentleman couldn't be registered. And at the time, and we're repeating it now, we said to them, but when the banks were required to register all their customers, the banks didn't come forward with these challenges and said, sorry, we can't do. That's the difficulty I have with them, Chairperson. Their entire approach is one of, sorry, we can't do it. They've never bought into RICA. They've never accepted the reasons for RICA coming into being. Now, they're telling us today that if in 6 months' time any of their customers are not registered, tough luck. Okay, we'll have to take them at their word for that. So, my first question to both Vodacom and MTN then, what initiatives did you take prior to August 2009? Because it seems that you took very little, if any. When we were busy with the bill, the original bill, Chairperson, we were saying to them, start registering your people now, or we can't do it. And we said, but you can. You have contract customers. What prevented them then from registering their contracted customers? Nothing. They chose to wait until the 2008 amendment bill was passed, and then only put in place initiatives in August 2009. That's the difficulty I have. So they waited an entire 7 years. The original bill was 2002, remember? They only took these initiatives in 2009. Presently, Chairperson, if you leave Parliament and you go into Plain Street, you can buy airtime, and you don't have to produce your ID card. I think they need to explain to us why that is so. Presently, and I proved this on the weekend, I went to a Checkers Hyper in Hillcrest outside Durban. There on the shelf, they were selling SIM cards. No ID necessary. Why is that so? If you've taken all these initiatives, how is it that you can sell airtime and SIM cards without the assistant saying, I need your ID and proof of permanent address? It's not necessary. So despite the initiatives that you presented us there, there's things that you haven't done that you should have done. Now, I'm not convinced by Vodacom's statement that they've done the best they can. I believe you've done as little as possible and have now come to us and said, please give us another 6 months. The reason they've done this, Chair, is because they know that when the bell rings on the 31st of July next year, they're going to say to their customers, it's government, it's not us. Now, MTN say to us, Chepas, that amongst other challenges they faced with Muslim women. Please, you know, when you come before a committee of parliament, you need to at least respect or give us a modicum of respect. Okay, I take you back to the banks. When a Muslim woman enters a bank, are you saying the bank forces her to remove her headdress? Are you saying the bank will refuse to assist her because she's wearing the headdress? Because you presented this as one of the challenges. Chairperson, I'm not in favor of this bill. Let me be upfront and frank with you. We've had nothing but grief from this since day one. I'm tempted to seriously propose that we ask all the users of the system to appear before us. Not only the police, but NIA and the rest of them. And get firsthand from them, because all we've heard is that the police are not in favor. I would like to ask the police why they're in favor of this bill, or the extension of the time being granted, and then ask similar questions of the others, and ascertain from them whether they're in favor. Because these service providers have only gone to cabinet. So they're not the only stakeholders, Chippers. And I must question the statement that's contained in the ministry's or the department's document that says, if the services of customers were to be terminated, vital information relating to such customers will be lost. That's odd, because it's recorded. How will it be lost? For now, Chairperson, that's all I have to say.
Okay. Honourable Chair Fuya, next.
Thanks. Yeah, I'll be a lot milder. With the contracts. I think Vodacom spoke about having it enforced since June, that if you get an upgrade, that you've got a RECA. I don't know why it wasn't done earlier. Because most of the contracts are 2 years, so that means you would have then covered everybody. It strikes me with, I think that somebody said there were something like 45 million SIM cards. What's our population? About 48. So obviously lots of people have got more than one, unless there's babies running around with SIM cards. Lots of people have got more than one SIM card, and I think you're unlikely to find 100% registration, because people may have lost those cards over the years and may not want to renew. One thing which I suppose the industry could only do if it did it all together was start, and I don't know if
presumably, if you cut everybody off on the 1st of January, you can do it before, and to start cutting off subscribers for say an hour with a message of this is what will happen if you you know if you haven't subscribed by the date of the final deadline. So I don't know if you've looked at that mechanism. I think the other point then to both MTM and Vodacom, if you're given the extension 1st of July, what mechanisms are you going to put in place to cope with the flood of people who have had their phones cut off, who now want to RICA? Are you looking at any plans from that? Then I think the last one is I see from Vodacom side that you've got this form. I mean, the Act is basically documentary evidence, so a verification by somebody, I think it is a useful innovation. I'm not sure what MTN are doing. You spoke about having people going to informal settlements. I'm not sure then how they're recurring people if they don't have documents to prove it. Things like the universities, schools, whether you've been to, because often those students don't necessarily have accounts, but they are, you know, traceable in terms of being at a university, whether you've linked up at all with them to ensure that form or a kind of form is filled out. So yeah, just those as some suggestions and some questions.
Chair, it is entirely thanks to the Felcos South Africans have communications. The rollout of landlines was a dismal failure because of government policy. It is because of what these companies did that South Africans can talk to each other and have some form of economic empowerment. And that is especially true of people in rural and remote areas, and it is especially true of the device, another piece of South African genius, of inventing prepaid, which made it possible for poorer people to have phones. We must not cut our consumers off. We must extend this deadline. It will be government's fault if people now get cut off, and it would be a wicked, wicked thing to do to South Africans, and especially the rural ones. So you must extend the deadline as is here proposed. I thought it was outrageous that it was ever proposed that the licenses of Celcos should be revoked if they didn't comply with this law. You don't take away a service to South Africans. So I personally don't understand the utility of this, because the people who won't register are precisely the crooks. I think that Snakes Nyoka is being extremely elegant in saying that the purpose of the Act is achieved, and that you can separate the wheat and the chaff, because those who won't register are the suspect ones by and large, but not all of them. You can then separate the wheat and the chaff, and you can disconnect the crooks. But I mean, was the purpose of the law to disconnect the crooks, which is a kind of form of extrajudicial punishment, or was it to find them? So I personally have a difficulty with the utility. It's after the fact. I won't spoil your intention and government's intention of implementing this law. People must obey the law of the land, and if the law of the land says they must go and get themselves recut. But yes, please give the extension, and perhaps my colleague Llewellyn Landers, the Honourable Landers, may just ask himself why it's quite difficult to register voters also. It's not that easy to get people to go and register themselves for anything. That was a comment, it's not a question.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. My question for clarity is directed to both VODA and MTN. Now, could I please find out, is the use of targeted SMSs, which you mentioned, innovative ways mentioned by MTN, and incentives supplemented by the use of other activities you've mentioned, do you also go out and out and make use of the media, namely the radio, TV, print media, particularly local newspapers with a big readership in rural areas, townships, and in Kukwin. Kukwin means informal settlements. Now, I have a strong feeling, Chair, that it's not a feeling, it's a belief, that using the media would make registration quicker, in my view. And finally, Chair, as a reasonable man, I support the extension of the deadline for the sake of order and stability in our country. Thank you, Chair.
Talking about Mkukwini, you remind me about Abashali Basem John Dolan. Okay, Mr. Honorable Matambane, Ndapani.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Honorable Chair, partly I would align myself with Honorable Lonas as far as the seriousness of them to register their customers. It has never been a problem. The verification of residence has never been a problem in South Africa, because all where people stay, there is a councillor or a traditional leader. What Vodacom is doing, I don't know if Vodacom or MTN with that proof of, with that form, yeah, had they done that before, they wouldn't have been having any problem now in verification of residences, just as the banks had did. So I think they waited for too long to implement that one. Otherwise, really, I understand, as they have also alluded to that one, people wait until the last day to register. I think we have to agree on that one. And I also really feel we have to give them this extension for the interests of South Africans.
Thank you, Chair. From our side, I also appreciate Mr. Lander's view, having sat for 12 years and remembering the bill. However, we sit with a magnitude of a problem here, and maybe that was slightly underestimated, but there has been time. The question is, you're going to increase your visibility in that. Immediately, the question is, why wasn't it done 6 months ago, when you foresaw that you were going to have a problem? But I do want to say, from our side, considering and bearing in mind Mr. Landers' concerns, we do support the extension, because my concern, sitting on the Finance Committee, sitting on and aware of the economics of our country, the impact of cutting off millions of people, the economic impact could be totally unintended and undesirable. We're in a country that is coming out of a recession, a global slowdown, and I think that it could have a hugely negative impact, particularly in your informal economic sector, with that form of communication. So you could have there are parties to blame from both sides. People that have waited to the last minute could well be penalized. But I think with our high levels of poverty and unemployment, I think that it might be very undesirable to have that impact. So whilst I appreciate Mr. Lander's concerns, I think at the end of the day, we should consider granting this extension. My last point is that the issue about law enforcement, that is the crux of the bill, is law enforcement. And I know time is very limited, but it would be interesting to hear from SAPS the sentence here that they do not oppose the extension. It would be interested to know on what basis that is so, and whether they're sufficiently covered at the moment, and why they say that the information will be lost, which may have assisted them, that information should be on record. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. I just want to express my displeasure at Chairperson, what continues to be a referral of traditional communities. I mean, communities living in rural areas has been problematic.
when it comes to the provision of services, be it in government or the private sector, that everybody knows that, as they said themselves, a number of people have cell phones, even in rural areas. They sell them cell phones and the necessary equipment. But now when it comes to ensuring that they are assisted in complying with the law, certainly this is a problem. Should not continue, but to be allowed to continue. I live in the rural areas, and there are places there where people gather on a regular basis to be informed about all sorts of things, development. And I don't see why people such as these I see here, representing the two companies, do not know that kind of facility that is there. The gatherings that are there, as I say, on a regular basis, where people are informed. The traditional, what you call, leaders, places of residence. So that should not continue to be presented as a problem, that they don't have addresses and so on. They get all the other things that they need, in spite of the fact that they have no streets, street addresses and so on. So that should be discouraged, Mr. Chairperson. And of course, we are not in a position to reject this field. This extension is necessary because more than the service providers, it's the people themselves who are going to suffer if we do not give them this opportunity. But that doesn't mean that slackness on their part should just be accepted as something that has to be lived with.
A tiny question.
And it's one that the Selco shouldn't really have to answer it, but apropos of what the Nkosi just raised, please remind me, how many millions of South Africans still don't have addresses? And I'm not talking about the rural areas. I'm talking about towns and cities. It's an enormous number of millions of South Africans don't yet have postal addresses. And that, too, is a complicating factor. Does anybody have that figure in their head now?
With your permission, at the same time, can they also then explain to us how the banks were able to address that particular challenge quite easily and comfortably?
From the side of the chairperson, I just want to find out from your efforts and endeavors in encouraging people to register, is there a message saying what will happen if a person doesn't recover? I didn't hear that being told to people. What will happen if you don't fit?
Okay, thanks, Chair. I think the starting point in trying to deal with some of the questions that have been raised is to acknowledge on our side that South Africa is a government of laws and not necessarily men, or women for that matter. But that once there is a law in the statute books, and taking into account the fact that the companies represented here are listed entities, our responsibility is to comply with those laws. It is true, as Honorable MP Landers has alluded to, that as and when this law was evolving, there were debates in this committee. But I think the essence and tenor of those debates was not in any way an indication on the part of the mobile operators that we didn't want to be involved with any initiative that seeks to fight combat crime, organized crime, or terrorism. I think what we're putting forward to the committee was a lot of practical measures and the economic reality of South Africa that needed to be taken into account. And it's equally true that RICA goes back to 2001, no dispute about it. But what is also important to note is that RICA had a number of provisions, some affecting fixed line
dealing with different issues, but that the parts of RICA specifically were dealing with the mobile segment of telecommunications didn't become effective until 2008. But even so, the implementation date was dependent on a proclamation that had to come from the Department of Justice. And it was only proclaimed in June of last year. Now, taking into account that we are an economic player in the market, one of the considerations of any investor who comes into a country is regulatory certainty. So if I say to our investors that we need about 250 million rand for this initiative, and the question is asked, but when are you legally bound to begin to implement RICA? And I say, well, there isn't any effective date, so it could be tomorrow, but it could be another 18 months. The chances of you securing the funds that are required to give effect to RICA are actually remote. But I would not say there was never any intention on our part to deal with these issues. But the main issue is you need a certainty, and that certainty was brought about sometime last year. And then we started grappling with RICA. And to put it to the committee that after a year of registering subscribers, we basically captured about 80% of our subscriber base. It's quite a phenomenal success. Now, as to the question about banks, I think what's important to note is just the quantum of the problem. With banks, we're basically, as I explained earlier, dealing about 10 million customers, but even those 10 million, there are lots of exemptions. So somebody, I think, who had deposits less than 15,000 rands or so, they didn't have to RICA. But in the case of the anti-exemption, anybody who has got a SIM card has got to have that SIM card RICA. If it's not RICA, and to answer a question, Chair, the law dictates, if it's not RICA by the 31st of December, 2010, as the law stands today, you disconnect those people. They're not going to have any form of communication. And that is why we were saying it's true we support the law enforcement objective of the legislation and we'll cooperate with government as we have cooperated with the Department of Justice throughout this process to make sure that objective is realized. But we're saying you've got to balance that against the economic reality that for as long as there is a prospect that we can still reach out to a sizable number of those people who are not registered if we afforded another 6 months. If we disconnect them come end of this year, the reality is we will be disabling a number of people who are today for running small businesses are dependent on a mobile phone as a means of communication, and not only voice today. What increasingly we're seeing in South Africa is there's an increase in our data traffic, and it doesn't happen through the conventional form of a platform like a computer. More and more people are actually using a cellular phone for emailing or all other forms of data communication. So we run the risk of basically creating difficulties for all those people. And I think there was a question about 45 million SIM cards. It's true. Context of South Africa, there is a phenomenon that we call dual SIMs. But even taking that into account, NRA estimates that 70% of South Africa, as people or human beings, are now are connected. But that when you take into account the phenomenon of dual SIMs, your penetration levels are well nigh 100%. But until you've exhausted all your avenues of registering subscribers, it's very difficult to know who's got two SIMs and who doesn't have a SIM. And one of the positive development of RICA is that, one, we're able to identify who our valuable customers are. We're actually also able to sift out those customers who are not real customers. They buy a SIM card in order to use it as a call card. But I think we're not anywhere close to a situation where we can say by end of December of this year, we actually know who has dual SIM and who doesn't have dual SIM. We'll work through that process. And for that reason, we think the 6 months extension period will also enable us to have clarity on that situation. Now, a question of using the media, I think that's valid, that if one uses all forms of communication, you basically reach out to as many people as possible. But I think it's equally true that it's generally not all South Africans who have access to traditional forms of media. And what we're putting forward is going forward, we're going to continue those campaigns, but we'll basically even extend it to other forms, alternative forms of media. As an example, we're going to use community radio very vigorously, because community radio is generally accessible to specifically defined communities. But media on its own, we don't think it will enable us to achieve our objective. And therefore, our proposal that going forward, we basically going to triangulate our customers. So if through the activities of our individual base stations, we're saying there's a SIM making a call, yeah, or SIMs making a call, and we can basically say in this community, it seems we have 1,000 SIMs or more who are not registered. We're basically going to deploy an agent in that community and make sure that we advertise our presence and that people need to come to our registration stations and have their details captured. I think one would assume that everybody would understand the consequences of not registering. What we need to do, or what we will do going forward, is basically to say the consequence of not registering is that this vital tool that we have for communicating is going to be meaningless to you going forward, so you better make sure that you register before the 31st of, that's assuming the extension is granted before the 31st or the 30th of June, 2011. Now, I have a question, what have we done before? I think we did a lot before we started recognizing through forecasting and otherwise that we're not going to meet the timeline. But what is also true, I don't think we did much before the effective date of RICA, so far as it affects the provisions of RICA dealing with the mobiles. And as I explained, it was mostly because, for as long as there wasn't an effective date from a perspective of investment, people would say, I'm not going to put 200 million if this can be delayed by another 2 years. But once it was law, you have no option but to comply, and that's exactly what we've done. We've complied with the letter of the law to the best of our ability, but we also recognize that there are limitations, and the reality is, and I think we recognize this as far back as April of this year, and then we made the presentation to the Department of Justice In one meeting, the Department of Justice also involved representatives from the police, representatives from the intelligence agencies, where we articulated our problem, and then that translated into a report that we gave to the Department of Justice, which was tabled before Parliament for consideration. So all I'm trying to put forward is that we have done the best we can in the circumstances, and it's not our intention not to comply with the law. We'll always comply with the law. If, as an example, an extension are not to be granted, we'll always have to disconnect those people by end of this year. But, we shouldn't be seen as an opposition to government. If anything, we see ourselves as a partner to government. And we just saying, let's put our head together. This is a dilemma that we have. Maybe another 6 months will do the trick. And I can ask Pagamila to deal very briefly with the questions that were raised by Nkosi Lumisa.
I don't know why she is asking me to answer your question when I also come from Transkei, Honorable Chief Folomisa. But I must acknowledge that it has been a tendency that we, unfortunately, see informal settlements and rural areas as problematic areas, which we shouldn't. And as a result, the response tends to take a long time to actually structure the response such that it is appropriate. The tendency has been that we expect that people from informal settlements and from rural areas must then go to a voter shop or an outlet and come with an address and do the registration, which we have also acknowledge that we have approached it in that way, and then we realize that actually this approach is not the best way to respond to registration of people in rural areas and informal settlements. Hence the design of an address form. The law expects that the person in a rural area would go to a chief or a traditional leader and get an affidavit, and then take that affidavit and go and register. Now, all we're saying is that we need to approach it differently, in that with the form, a person can take the form, get a signature, then go back and register. Let me put it this way. We acknowledge we have learned very slowly in that area. And for that matter, there has been other problems that have been picked up even by the Department of Justice and some other people in relation to the totality of the address problem, not only in relation to rural areas or informal settlements. It is just possible that you will find roughly about 10,000 or 20,000 people actually answering to one address. And the question is, will law enforcement see that as appropriate or not? So it is a problem, Chief, and I think, Honorable Chief, sorry. But it's a problem that we're addressing so that we don't look at rural or people from rural areas or people in informal settlement as problematic people to deal with, but rather customized solutions that they are appropriate to address those people. So I apologize for that.
Just one last issue I didn't address. I think there was reference to the fact that it's possible for someone to walk into a store and buy a SIM card without it being registered. The reality is that shouldn't happen. And if it does happen, we actually have a mechanism for controlling that, in the sense that you buy a SIM, strictly speaking, whoever is selling that SIM should take your details. And my experience is that they would generally say, without an ID and without proof of residence, they're not going to sell that SIM. But assuming that system doesn't work, we actually don't activate a SIM without confirmation. Somebody faxing to us a copy of the ID and proof of residence. Yeah. Okay.
The way it would work is that in most of the stores you can buy the SIM because I can buy it for someone else, but I don't want to be registered with my name. But before you activate that SIM card, it has to be registered. You have to go back to one of the outlets or anywhere where you have to go and register. The network will not allow it access unless that SIM is activated.
We'll come back to that. Let us give MTN some opportunity.
I know sometimes it's always a problem coming back after my colleagues also have attempted to answer some of the questions, but suffice to say, I think I will try to answer some of the questions which are related also to the MTN. I think the first question relating also again, just to acknowledge and emphasize the fact that as MTN, indeed we are a listed company. And we take compliance. We have a whole department centered with a whole lot of human force in terms of compliance, and also supporting the initiatives of the government. And that has not only just come through RICA only. Just to mention one of the few, even in terms where we were not allowed, it's not part of the bottom line or associated with the mobile. In the gun license, for example, we were also scrutinized and take the bread from the public in terms of assisting the police, where we came up with 3 SMSs about the gun licensing and all sort of things, but which were not also geared at any profit making, but basically on the basis of saying, as a law-abiding citizen, this is a good initiative, we need to assist. And I think just while I'm still talking about it, I could also just answer one of the questions also which was asked, posed relating to why would probably, I know maybe the deputy DG will answer it in terms of why the law enforcement police were not opposed to it and why would the information not be lost. I think also it's also important to note that as we speak now currently, we got the system, this geographic location system, which we have been working with the police in terms of assisting them in terms of the current information we have, where we assist them in terms of location. I mean, you will be aware of the fact that there has been so many cases which were only possible due to the fact that the mobile operators were collaborating with the police. I mean, we, as MTN again, I mean, I can mention lots, but a few. The Lee Matthew case was also a typical example, which was also possible because of the cooperation we deal with the police. We recently, after the World Cup, also applauded in terms of the assistance we gave to the FBI, the Interpol, during the World Cup in terms of making sure that they do have sensitive information of controlling crime. So we do, in terms of the take, as a very, very step in terms of supporting the government to combat crime. And if I just also answer one of the things which we... why was not this thing done before? I think we were also even pleaded, before even the effective date of RICA, we also have tried, irrespective of the fact that we have to do the negotiations with our retailers in terms of concluding the agreements, and we also have to develop the software in terms of to assist us to RICA the people. We were also, just before the effective date, we even piloted the RICA issues in some of the areas where we conducted pilot phases before RICA could come into effect. So that was also to show the seriousness in terms of why we believe we have to cooperate with the government. And also, if I could go, another one question also was about the SMSs, the use of the SMSs and other incentives. We do use also the media. It's true that we use the media. We use a lot of radios and community radios. And I think... just to mention a few, even in this Sunday World, myself speaking to you, addressing you now here, I was up on the article of Sunday World, where we were talking about the whole page about the RICA. As we speak today, even at 6 o'clock today, SABC 2, I will be appearing again, specifically for 30 minutes, talking about educating people about RICA, why is it necessary to RICA, why you need to recur your SIM card. So we do take really initiative in terms of making sure that our people do get the understanding. Yes, I think as our colleagues has indicated, there is an acknowledgement from the operators and also from us, particularly as MTN, that previously we thought, maybe relating also to the Honourable Member's question about the bank, that the view was traditionally we thought people would come to us, like people going to the bank. People will come to our stores, will come to us and with all the information. But that was not the case. Lots of people still do not want to go. You come up with all the incentives of say you're going to win a free cell phone, you're going to win airtime. They still don't want to come. So we have now obviously acknowledged that the best way to do is to go to the people. And that's why now we go into the fan parks, where people love to go into the movies to see, to go into their houses, go into the rugby, to the matches on weekends, to make sure that where we locate people with a presence, where we could have people with more presence there, we could send our people to go there. So that acknowledgement, yes, it came late because we thought probably people would come to us. So those are some of the acknowledgement made on the initiative, which I could say, yes, it is true that somehow we learn in the process. And again, I think as Snakes have mentioned, the volume we're talking about of plus minus 44, 45 million is quite a huge, and we thought probably people were running numbers into our stores, but that's not the case. And then you have all these points of presence, you establish all these points where people can go and rigor, and if you go on a daily basis, do a, like which we said, we now have a system which sort of monitor in terms of how many people go into our stores, various points of presence to rigor. We realize that there's a very few numbers, hence that's why with the strategy of saying let's go to their houses, their soccer fans. And I think from the MTN point of view, we understand there was an issue of the bottom line. Yes, we understand there is an issue of the bottom line. But I think I can acknowledge sitting in front of you here now and also promise to say that from our side, it's not just the bottom line. I think here is a question of basically of saying we need to assist in combating crime. We have been given a lot of awards that I don't want to brag in terms of that area, in terms where we've given awards of assisting the government in combating one of the highest crime areas in South Africa. So yes, I think the appeal from our side is that indeed, if we don't get the extension, we will be forced to cut. We do have the mechanism. We have the system in places. But I think it will be catastrophe, and also the timing in December where people have to phone their loved ones during Christmas. It will really be catastrophe. Thanks.
Okay. I think in South Africa, we develop a doctrine of sufficient consensus. At the end of the day, we should determine whether is there any sufficient consensus on this request from the mobile industry. They are coming with this condonation to be condoned and the like. Let me open it up again for honourable members, honourable Dean Smart, honourable Jeffrey, honourable professor.
Yes, I mean, sir, you have my enthusiastic support for extension. But perhaps if you will allow me afterwards, there's a single question I want to ask in order to make use of the fact that the Felcos are here and Advocate Radman, because there is something I think we should write into the law which will actually help and have an effect on crime. And I speak as an irritated consumer because the Felcos also have their unacceptable side. But perhaps afterwards you will allow me to ask such a
Honourable Jeffrey?
Unfortunately, nobody responded to my two questions, which were, what planning are you going to do for 1st of July? Because there will be people who won't have registered. So what infrastructure are you going to put in place to ensure that if there's a greater volume, that they can be dealt with? And then number two, I made the suggestion that you may also get more response if you start cutting people off, you know, like for an hour. It would obviously have to be something that the whole industry does, because otherwise if Vodacom cut off their unrecord customers for an hour, they'll all get highly irritated and run off to MTN or Cell C. So that would be something that, and I don't know if it's possible. I know when you get your landline cut off, you pick it up and there's a voice on the other end which says the service has been disconnected. I don't know with cutting off a, I don't think it works the same way, but it would be good if there could be a voice which says, you haven't recurred, this has been cut off for an hour, and we'll be coming back, but please recur. Or something like that, or an SMS that goes through when it's cut off or something. I think once you're cut off, there's no linkage, so that's not possible. But can those two issues be looked at? I think as far as chair, look, I don't think we've got much choice with the bill. The 1st of January is not a particularly good period for people to discover they don't have any cell phone reception. But I do think more could have been done. You also didn't respond, Vodacom specifically, MTN didn't raise it at all. Why did you only start requiring the contract upgraders to RECA in June of this year? In fact, that's something you could have started. It wouldn't have cost any money, I don't think. So I hear the argument about asking for a budget, but for the contract upgraders, It would be very easy to recur them when they come to upgrade. And I notice, okay, I can't remember the figure for Vodacom, but MTN is bad. It's 35% of those, as far as I read it, contract customers that have not registered, have not recurred. So when did you as MTN start doing it? So just those additional, please.
In fact, the prepaid, Honourable Jeffrey, the prepaid landline says your line is about to be terminated, something like that. You hear that message some few days before it actually happened. There was another end, was it, Professor?
Thank you, Chair. It's just a simple question. I accept that MTN, Voda, and Cell C are rivals in business. You can't dispute that. Now, Chair, having said that, I'm concerned by the conspicuous absence of Cell C in this forum. Could the Vodacom and the MTN speculate to us and ensure us whether or not Cell C is part of this request for extension? Because it will be useful for us to know that. Thank you, Chair.
Okay, please answer those outstanding questions. And thank you.
Well, I think Advocate Radman is probably the best person and maybe more objective than us to answer the question whether Cell C has also filed a request for an extension. As for the other issues around the question of upgrade contract, I'll ask Hester to deal with that.
But Cell C didn't come here because they're an appalling business and they can't manage their time properly. That was a joke about Cell C. I wasn't.
Just a question. Yes, certainly we can cut them off earlier or for a period of time. It would, however, require some development on our side, because when the implementation is, or the bill is implemented to lock a customer, you can't just activate the service again without registering him. So it would require development. Right now we could probably put something in place to put on a temporary hold, but it would have been necessary to do it between all the networks and have agreement. I think we can look at it. And I'll certainly look at that. Then around upgrades, I think you need to remember that the customer is out of contract. And when a customer is out of contract, it's easy for him to make a decision to go to either stay with you or leave. And then again, it's a competitive decision made. But if I require him to register when he upgrades and MTN doesn't, then obviously he could really be annoyed, and that's the basis on what the decision is made. We did, however, since June this year, have implemented it, and we are getting customers to register that way. What we've already done is we've targeted the customer with a bill and all of those to register. In regards to what's being put in place for the cutoff date, we've identified places that we call hotspots. In the summer period now, the other places would obviously be different to where it would be in June, end of June next year. But we've identified places where all people would, like in the holiday areas and all of those places where we need to put liquor stations so that the people can go, when they cut off, they can go there and they can go and register to be able to get their service, access to their service back.
Because I want to quote her during the debate on this bill. She made my case, Shepard. Esther who?
Yeah, I think just to put that comment in perspective, often it's very easy for somebody operating outside this industry. It's very easy that we can collaborate on an initiative such as RICA. Reality is sometimes it's so confusing that even the Competition Commission tried to make it an issue. And it's not just about RICA. As an example, mobile termination rates are regulated in the Electronic Communications Act. And for about 6 years, the Competition Commission was investigating that as to whether there is collusion or no collusion. So the real issue is when one makes these decisions, you take into account the full plethora of laws that regulate this industry. And sometimes they may or may not be competitive issues. But, you know, on the one hand, I can say I'll get away with it to see CASA. Competition Commission that doesn't fully appreciate the nature might make it an issue. Now, you know, legally one can argue that eventually I would prevail. But what generally happens is that our companies reputationally, they take a huge knock once it's evident to everyone that either ICASA or the Competition Commission is investigating you. I don't know, Advocate Radman, if you want to answer.
Later, Chair, just to respond to the questions in regard to the comments that we received and what considerations that we took into account when we decided to go to Cabinet with the bill. But if you want me to do so now, I will do so.
Right. Your little question.
Does Advocate Redman not think, because I'm sure our friends would not, that we should write a little bit of law to require the cell phone companies, when a customer phones in to say, my phone has been stolen, you do not just blacklist, you must deactivate the SIM immediately, because what happens is that people then get massive phone bills because the crook is using the SIM card or the phone. It should happen automatically, and it doesn't. And there you have immediately an example of a SIM and a phone that becomes available to the criminal world, and you're not going to trace that thing because it'll carry my details.
I'll ask my technical advisor to respond to that question. Inad can do so.
Thank you, Chair. I know that there are arrangements in place, but it's informal arrangements between the MCOs and SAPs. One's a cell phone has been lost or stolen or destroyed, then in terms of the act, they need to report it to the nearest police station, and then the police station, yeah. But we are working on legislation to formalize the blacklisting of cell phones.
Right, honorable members of the committee. As I was saying, when I was listening to the debate here, I was sort of feeling that there emerges a sufficient consensus to say, let us allow them an extension, unless someone says my interpretation is not correct.
No, I agree with that. My worry is if MTN escaped any response to my questions, and I don't want to delay the meeting unnecessarily, but if they could do a quick response. And then I do think that the point that has come out that Mr. Landers has highlighted, that you know, where they couldn't Rika prepaid because MTN or Cell C weren't doing it. I mean, I don't know. I think that's a poor reflection of the industry as a whole. I mean, the guys should have got together a lot earlier to say, look, how can we implement this so that one group doesn't get a competitive advantage? Because really, June is much too late. And maybe MTN, you could just sort of respond on when did you start recurring contract customers. But don't take too long because the chair's already looking agitated.
Okay. Thanks, Honourable Chair. Just to respond to Honourable Jeffrey's question, I think the question with regard to the contract customers, I think we have right away from treated the contract customers like prepaid customers at the beginning, where we thought they will have to recur. And also, I think as part of the acknowledgement was that there is this confusion where the contract customers thought, you got all my documents, you got my ID when I took contract, you send me the bill, I'm paying you, why would I have to redo it again? Because you have got it, you know where I stay. So the question they keep, challenges they have is that, can we, for example, where we're also engaging with the DOG to say, can we sort of have an easier way of verification with regard to those customers where you said you're still having the same address, still the particulars are the same, rather than have to require the same person again to come up with a similar document. So those are also some of the challenges we have. But we have been doing, as I said earlier, that when we even put pilot this thing before the RICA effective date from our side.
And then also, I think you've missed the question. It was recurring when they come to upgrade, not recurring
yes.
when they take out the contract.
Yes.
When did you start recurring when they upgrade?
I mean, when we were started as early as, I mean, David can also answer it. I mean, we were not waiting for them to probably come and upgrade and not recur them. We were recurring them simultaneously, even when they do upgrade. Even to the point of instance, anything regarding upgrade or activation, we have been insisting the people to say we have to recur you. But of course, there's a new information, a competitive information, which we didn't know that our competitors were not doing it. I mean, we're only knowing it now.
when did you start?
No, from the outset, when the person comes for upgrade, we've been asking them to recur them.
Just we need to get on to industry divisions, but I noticed that Vodacom don't seem to agree. But anyway, it's noticed, yeah.
Can I say before we lose members, we have to vote on the bill before we attend this meeting, and then and
just don't forget the hard copies that we requested from them.
All right, Mr. Ratman is going to take us through the bill clause by clause before we vote on it.
Yeah, there's only two clauses in the bill, and both these clauses extend the deadline. Which at the moment is it says within 18 months from the said date, that is the date of implementation, which was the 1st of June, which it will expire then on the 31st of December. We've changed that by indicating that the deadline would now be the 30th of June 2011.
There it is. Do I have any person to move for the adoption of this bill? Mr. Seconder, that is it. Right. So it is. Okay. Thank you very much. The bill is adopted. Can I make some announcement before members leave? There is a request from people from Geneva. I want to just make this announcement. There is a group of people, they call themselves United Nations Working Group, visiting South Africa on the 10th and the 14th. That is with effect from tomorrow. All they want to do, they wrote a letter to our former chairperson, Ngakura Matlodi, to say they want to meet with the the Justice Portfolio Committee to talk about the regulations pertaining to the mercenaries. When I got this, I said immediately this has to do with the Department of Defense or the Defense Portfolio Committee. But I was told that that has been transversed. They still insist that they want to meet the justice. And as a compromise, I said, okay, can they also get the chairperson of the Portfolio Committee on Defense and other members there? Because they are saying they want to talk about these regulations. I've asked for the library to make available the copies. So any one of our members here who will make himself or herself available, there is a copy just to look at it, because they want to raise some issues or to discuss it. And then up to so far, it has been difficult to get the time or the date. Initially, it was said because tomorrow the plenary was supposed to start at 3 o'clock, we were thinking of 2 o'clock, but it has changed because now there is condolences as from 2 o'clock. So the possibility or the probability is that maybe a slot will be possible after plenary or on Thursday, just to meet with those people because they are here from the 10th up to the 14th of October. And unfortunately, the 13th and the 14th weekend, so all we have is that between tomorrow and Friday.
Plus was just whispering to me that she, after a trip to Venice and to Frankfurt, that she was very eager to meet them.
Chairperson, may we ask you to deploy yourself to represent us at this? I'm so sorry, I won't be able to.
Although they were retained. Yeah, I'll leave a copy with the Secretary Bonani to say anyone who think will be available, please avail yourself. Let us talk to them. They just want to ask some few questions and the like. Officer, thank you very much, and Kampane. Thank you, Honorable Swartz.